fighting against injustice across Connecticut. Melissa in the Morning checks in with the Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities. Now on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
You know, we're really in the midst of such a religious time in America. There are so many holidays that are already happening later this week. We're in the midst of right now. For example, Muslims began Ramadan earlier this month on March 11th. Jews will celebrate Purim starting on March 23rd. They've got Passover later in April. This Sunday marks the start of Holy Week, leading to Easter, of course, for Christians. And so we thought it was a really great time to sort of do a refresher about religious accommodations. Michael Roberts back with us from the Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities. Good morning, Michael. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Happy to be back with you.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you here. And first of all, Michael, give us a better sense of when we say religious accommodations, we're talking about in the workplace, correct?
That's right.
So what are some things that maybe people have a misconception about? I mean, there's been a lot of movement and a lot of talk about this, even at the national level, what religious accommodations are acceptable and what is not. So where are we sort of at? Give us kind of a snapshot and certainly things that maybe people might have missed in recent history regarding religious accommodations at work.
Well, you and I have previously talked about how not so long ago there was a major change at the federal level, a decision from the U.S. Supreme Court that sort of either clarified or expanded the test that employers would have to meet in order to deny or properly push back on requests for religious accommodation. For a while, federal courts were using what lawyers called the de minimis test. You know, they basically just had to show that there was a minimal disruption to the workplace that might result from a requested accommodation. But ever since last year's Groff's decision from the U.S. Supreme Court, employers have to show more than that. They have to show that there would be some kind of substantial increased cost to the conduct of their particular business. So coming into this, like you said, this particularly religious time of the year in terms of religious observances, it's sort of good to remember that we now live in a post-Groff world, that if folks are looking to make religious accommodation requests for either time off or to sort of swap a shift or change their hours, that the employer has to look at whether there's a substantial increased cost that would result from the requested accommodation.
And when you say a substantial cost, I mean, how do you, I guess, as an employer, how do you prove that this person, for example, taking Holy Week off? Like, I look at that we're in the middle of tax season and everything. Let's say you've got somebody who this is like their Super Bowl, right? Not in a good way, but it's like they're so busy. They're in the tax season, but they're also super religious. And listen, I've got to take Holy Week off. Or maybe you have, you know, somebody who has been recognizing Ramadan and they've had to take time off because they've been fasting, things like that. I mean, how do you prove? Is it something that employers have to take note of, you know, ahead of time? It's not like they can project, oh, because this person will be missing, we know we're going to miss this amount of money, or we're going to, you know, get a financial hit, essentially, right? Like, how can employers prove that?
Yeah, so it's going to depend on the facts, the specific facts of each business, each workplace. There's no one size fits all when it comes to these considerations, as there very rarely is in anything relating to discrimination law. You have to really look at the facts of each circumstance. So like you said, perhaps in the tax situation, if this is the time of year that's incredibly busy, you know, it may depend on the level of staffing that the workplace has. If there are, you know, three dozen other folks who can pick up a few of the cases or the paperwork proceedings that a particular employee has or would otherwise do during Holy Week, for example, then it may be that there is less of a substantial cost to the employer to grant the accommodation. But if there's one other person who would have to work, 100 hours that week in order to make up for it, maybe it's not. But that's ultimately going to come down to the specifics of the workplace. It may be that shifts can be swapped. Say, hey, this time of the month, this is my period for the observances of my religion. Maybe you can take on this extra work during this time, and then when your religious observance comes in the later part of the month, I can take that on for you. And so there's all kinds of ways that potentially the burdens of allowing for religious accommodations or religious observances can be taken on, but it really is going to depend on the individual workplace.
And again, we have Michael Roberts here, who's with the Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities, and we're talking about religious accommodations in the workplace. And this really stems from a Supreme Court case. And remind folks, if you don't mind, Mike, wasn't this the driver, the delivery driver who needed to take time off because of his religious beliefs? But because there was such an uptick in deliveries, especially like Amazon, who now deliver 7 days a week, they couldn't allow him to take weekends off anymore. And so isn't that the case that we're talking about?
That's exactly right, Melissa. Yeah, he had requested to be able to take Sundays off in observation of the Sabbath. And, originally when he was first hired by the Postal Service, there weren't Sunday deliveries. Mm-hmm. But then, as you said, with the uptick of Amazon, at first, the Sunday deliveries were so few that others could easily take it on. But then as there began to be more and more of these Sunday deliveries, the Postal Service felt it was more of a problem and less of an accommodation that they could provide. But under the previous test, the de minimis test, there wasn't a lot that they needed to show in the way of an effect on the workplace. But following this decision, they have to actually look more at, are there other folks who can take this on? Are they, even if they're able to get paid overtime, are there folks who can take on these responsibilities? Are there shifts that can be swapped? Can this employee, work the extra shifts later on during the week? Things like that.
So we have Mike Roberts here, who's with the Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities. We were talking about religious accommodations because we're really in the midst of a very religious time of the year. And we kind of highlighted that before. But I was just curious before we wrap up, Mike, as we were talking about the Supreme Court case regarding this, all kind of stemmed from a UPS worker who was given religious accommodations, didn't have to work on Sundays. But then as the industry changed, he did have to start picking up Sunday shifts, and that wasn't going to work for him. So essentially, he was separated from the industry. He was out of the industry, which is what prompted this whole thing. So here's my question for you, and from the commission's standpoint, if your industry is changing, what can employers do to maybe ease some of the issues that could arise with people who already have religious accommodations? Or what could employees do so they could get ahead of these future projections that could impact their current religious accommodations at work?
Yeah, so the key word in any kind of accommodations conversation, whether it's for religious accommodations or accommodations related to a disability, is negotiation, is discussion, is, although I guess that's two words, but the idea overall being flexibility and having a conversation between the employer and the employee. It's not meant to be sort of a one-sided dictate. It's supposed to be a conversation between the two sides, the employee saying, here's what I need, and the employer saying, here's what we can do. Sometimes that's going to allow for thinking ahead as to what's coming down the pike. So, for example, there's a lot of discussion these days about AI. A lot of industries are thinking about how AI is going to impact their workplace. And in some ways, maybe that's going to allow for accommodations to be provided that otherwise in the past may not have been able to be provided. Other times it comes up really suddenly. You know, I remember having cases where the conversation was around work from home, that for either religious purposes or disability purposes, the employer was requesting to be able to work from home a certain amount, and the employer was saying, we don't have that. We don't allow that to happen. Fast forward to 2020, and all of a sudden, everybody is thinking about working from home, and a lot of workplaces are instituting it, and so that can change really quickly. But ultimately, it's about that conversation and having an ongoing conversation. So maybe what does or doesn't work right now, in a year from now, maybe will, or maybe it'll have to be revisited and say, hey, we're not going to be able to do this anymore, but here's things that we can provide that may be able to help you.
Well, Mike, I think this is such an important conversation, and I appreciate especially the refresher right now, because we really have been and continue to be in a very religious time of the year right now. And so I think it's important to know these things, and I appreciate you coming on to talk about it in depth. Thank you.
Always a pleasure.